This is Olive, and I'm 11 years old, and I live in Southside.
This is Cooper, and I'm 4 years old.
This is Elena. I'm 13 years old and live in Spickley.
This is Julian. I'm 14 years old and live in Highland Park. And this is the Kittsburg Podcast.
Glad to have you with us for the Kittsburg Podcast, where we introduce you to interesting people and fill you in on Pittsburgh's hidden gems that you are definitely going to want to visit with your family. I'm Christine Sorensen. I anchor the news at KDKA-TV, and I'm a Kittsburg producer, and I'm here with my friends and colleagues who are also moms.
Hi, everybody. I'm Melissa Rayworth, Kittsburg's editor, and I'm so glad to share this episode with you. Therapist and gaming expert Matt Massar has so much insight for families. And we've also got honest intel from local teens as they talk about what they wish their parents understood about online gaming.
And I'm Kittsburg's director, Yu Ling Chang, and I'm excited to hear about today's Pittsburgh gem, which is a place my own kids love, the Museum Lab. Melissa, tell us about it.
So the Museum Lab is an incredible place. It is part of the Children's Museum campus, but while many families may know about the Children's Museum and they may take their younger kids there, they may not realize that they can also explore the Museum Lab, which is especially good for kids in the 9 to 14 sort of age range. It is located in this incredible refurbished former Carnegie Library, and the stacks in the library, the area that had been filled with books, is now filled with something called the Gymlasium, which is a three-story rope climbing space that kids 9 and over can explore. There's also an incredible maker space called the Make Lab, there's a tech lab, and there are also exhibits that families can just go to look at. So it's an incredible place where you can create, but you can also discover things.
I love this museum, and for the reasons you outlined, because my kids love doing hands-on activities, but it does get to a point where they're like, tween is like, I'm a little too old for the Children's Museum, which I adore that place. So the Museum Lab is perfect, and I've done the Gymlasium. It's fun for adults. It's fun to climb.
I wondered if it was okay for grown-ups to be climbing around in there.
Yeah,
what a
fun.
Wonderful thing. All right, that's on my personal list.
It's a bit of a workout, too.
It's really cool, yeah.
And we've taken some of the classes there, and it's a space developed just for those tweens and teens.
Yeah, it's a wonderful space. I mean, the architecture is incredible how they've redesigned it, but it's really a special place. So definitely I hope people will check out this hidden gem.
One hidden surprise that I didn't realize, they also host personal events like weddings. Like, you can have a big family party in this unbelievable space. At Kittsburg.org, we often include events happening at Museum Lab and at the Children's Museum in our event guides and on our calendar. To learn more, you'll find links at Kittsburg.org/podcast. Now, stay tuned for our interview with Matt Massar.
Pittsburgh is Kittsburgh. You're listening to the Kittsburg Podcast.
The gaming industry is so big. It's larger than movies, television, and music combined, with more than 3 billion gamers worldwide. For kids, it can be fun, interactive, creative, a connection with other kids, and sometimes it can be addictive. A lot of parents wonder how much is too much. And here today to help is Matt Massar, a therapist with the Better Institute in Pittsburgh, who specializes in gaming disorder. Matt, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited.
Yeah. So for parents who are concerned about how much their kids are gaming, where do we even start?
I think a great place to start is having parents examine their own perspectives on video games. Whether it be a negative, neutral, or positive perspective, it's important for them to understand how they're viewing video games. Do they view them in the same kind of lens that they would view other hobbies their kids are involved with, whether it's a sport or extracurricular? Are they viewing it the same way, or do they have some maybe biased stereotypes towards it of this is just a mindless waste of time? So by kind of self-reflecting on their own perspectives gives them a chance to identify any biases that they may have. I always tell parents to steal a line from Ted Lasso, and I think he might have stolen it from Walt Whitman maybe. Be curious, not judgmental. Being curious about your perspective, and if you do have a negative perspective towards video games, I'm not here to try to convince you to have this overall positive one where you absolutely love them, but at least take a non-judgmental approach towards your perspective.
That's really good advice. You know, I think about me myself as a parent and the games I played as a kid, which were really simple games, two-dimensional, mm-hmm. right? And it's so different now. And a lot of times, I don't know what it is. So I find it overwhelming or maybe even a little scary simply because I don't know.
Sure.
And so I'm curious, like, how do we have these constructive conversations with our kids about gaming?
Sure. So once you kind of self-reflect and go through your own perspective, sometimes it's as easy as just sitting down and talking about it. Again, in that non-judgmental way, you can think of it as being curious over confrontational. So really just some basic questions. Open-ended questions are usually the best. What video games do you like playing? Why do you like playing them? Do you have a favorite streamer? Do you have a favorite character? Those kind of disarm your child or teenager to make them see that, oh, they're actually genuinely interested in learning about what I'm doing rather than just constantly limit setting. So this way, you are kind of forming an alliance with your teenager or kid about video games rather than just trying to limit set.
I love one of these phrases that you've used, which is, how can parents be coaches instead of referees? So maybe tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. In my clinical practice, I see parents burn themselves out from being referees. What I mean by referees is constantly limit setting, constantly trying to correct every single behavior that they don't agree with their child around video games. And what quickly happens is you burn the child out, you burn yourself out from all this limit setting, and all it really does is create this wedge between the two of you. What we want to reframe it to is more coaching, where you're working together, collaborating, and you're not seen as working against each other or opposition, but, oh, this is someone who's going to help provide me guidance and is open to hearing me and my views on video games.
So as a parent, how do you know when it's too much gaming?
Sure. So this is probably the number one question I get from parents is, how long should my child be on video games or screen time? And unfortunately, my answer is always, it depends. It depends on a couple different factors. There's no magic number for the amount of screen time that's appropriate. It's really based on a couple of different factors that you might notice. So one could be neglecting responsibilities. So is my child failing to do their homework, keeping up on chores, things like that? Mood changes, behavior changes. Are they more irritable? Are they being more reclusive, hiding away in their room when they used to spend a lot of time in the family area? Sleep, physical health concerns. Are they getting less sleep, poorer sleep because they're on their screens right up until bedtime? Are they getting up too late for school or for work? I mean, if they have like a part-time job over the summer. And just loss of interest in other activities. So my kid was a big swimmer, and then they started just playing more and more video games, and now they've abandoned swimming altogether. So those are some signs to look out for in terms of when gaming can start to be negatively impacting someone's life.
And I know pediatricians have come up with screen time guidelines. Are those also good to use depending on the child's age, whether it's adding up gaming as well as school time and maybe social media, adding all that in together?
Sure. They're really good reference points, definitely. I know they each have suggestions for each age range, which I think are good to go off of. But again, it really comes down to, you know your child best. Take that guideline into consideration, but also understand, you know, what is your child interested in? What other hobbies, activities do they have going on? And kind of come up with your own game plan based around those.
And in addition to that, how do I figure out if a game is age appropriate for my kids?
That's a really great question. And there are a couple different resources out there. The one I tend to default to and recommend to parents is called Common Sense Media. I think it's like the Common Sense Media Group, but their website is Common Sense Media. And they have essentially an archive of, I don't want to say all video games that exist because there are thousands and thousands of them, but they have a really great database of video games and other online content such as, you know, TV shows, movies, and they independently review all of those. So separate from, you know, is it just rated E for everyone, teenage, mature, they do their own independent review where they kind of analyze a couple different factors. You can screen out for what's the level of violence in these, the language. They even have categories such as like, are there positive role models displayed in the games? And a really important one, consumerism. So are there a lot of microtransactions in the game? Is that something that's being pushed heavily? And you can filter through and see what their recommendations are. And they have a full write-up for each of these video games. And then you can better judge if it's appropriate for your child or not. So just as video games can help with, you know, problem-solving skills, social connectedness, there are some addictive aspects to it, just in the game design themselves. So I also work in the problem gambling field, and I'm seeing a lot more gambling mechanics being involved in video games. So that's something to definitely keep an eye out for. We see these in the forms of kind of slot machine mechanics that are popping up in video games. So definitely things to pay attention to, because that's an aspect of video games that can create that addictive nature.
So with that addictive nature, how do we know when it is an addiction? And then where should we go for help?
Sure. So I view gaming on a spectrum ranging from healthy to at risk to problematic to disordered. And essentially when it becomes a problem is when it's impacting someone's life. So you don't necessarily need to meet a diagnostic criteria to know that it's a problem. Currently, the World Health Organization recognizes gaming disorder as a official diagnosis. The American Psychiatric Association is in the future consideration aspect right there. But essentially, it's a problem when it's impairing daily functioning. So whether that's impairing functioning at school, work, personal life, family life, that's when you know it's a problem. That's the point of time to reach out for help.
So you've talked about the inverted triangle of parenting. Explain what that is and how that can help parents.
Yes, this is a really cool concept. Can't take credit for it. It was developed by my colleagues, Jody Bechtold and Dr. Alyssa Wilson. So I'll try and describe this without the visual. So picture kind of a pyramid, almost like the food pyramid, split into three separate sections. The top being rewards, bottom being limit setting, and the middle being planned ignoring. So this is kind of how we view parents and their discipline structures typically. And you can think of each of those chunks in terms of effort of time, with rewards getting the least amount of time and limit setting getting the most. So like we talked about earlier, parents are often setting limits constantly and they're burning themselves out by doing it. And what they're not doing as much is the identifying good behavior, that positive reinforcement, praising, rewarding for when things go well. And if they are, they're not doing it consistently or consistently enough. So what we suggest is almost inverting that pyramid. So now rewards are the biggest section at the top, and we're really focusing on positive reinforcement, pointing out good behaviors. If a kid gets off their device before they were even told to, point that out, call that out, identify it so that you can positively reinforce that behavior. Oh, and I forgot to mention the middle section is planned ignoring. This is for junk behaviors. So, you know, you tell a kid to get off their phone a couple minutes before they're set to, they roll their eyes at you. You could correct that behavior. Is it worth your time? Probably not. If it becomes a persistent problem, then yes, it's probably something that's worth addressing. You know, infrequent eye roll or a sarcastic comment every once in a while does not need to be corrected every single time, because you're just going to burn yourself out. So then when we flip the pyramid or invert the pyramid again, limit setting doesn't go away. It just becomes really focused on high risk behaviors. So this is cursing at a parent maybe when they're told to get off a video game, or lying about getting their homework done. Those are those behaviors that need to be corrected and need to have limits set on them. But again, they're very targeted. It's not just scattershot across the board. We're going to try to correct every behavior that we don't agree with.
Yeah, as a parent, that sounds a lot less exhausting.
Sure,
and
sure.
Much more manageable. So thank you for explaining that.
Sure, of course.
So I'm also curious with gaming and kind of inverting the triangle, right, and reinforcing positive behavior. I noticed the other day my daughter was like, "Do you want to play a game with me?" And I was like, maybe, but I should probably say yes. And I did it. And it was really interesting because she was explaining to me what she was doing. And I have to say, it helped me understand a little bit more about what she likes about video games.
Yes, that is, again, not to be hyperbolic, that is like the number one homework assignment I'll give a parent and a child is go home, play a video game together, and just see how it goes. Because it almost is like the newer version of a board game night, is playing video games together. And even if you're terrible at video games, your kids will probably think that's funny, first of all. But they'll just enjoy the experience of it. And even if you don't, let's say you don't want to play, they love watching streamers. So they'll love to pretend to be a streamer and have you be their one viewer. And they'll walk you through what they're doing and feel like they're a professional streamer instead. So don't feel like you have to play. If you're really against it, just kind of sit there and just be in that present moment with them.
Great advice. Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. This is really helpful.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
I love that he started with the idea that
it's good to step back and just kind of think about your own perspective that you're bringing to gaming. Like, do you see this as a valid hobby or not? Because I hadn't really been a video game kid when my boys first got interested in video games. I had to not just think of it as a way they were killing time. I had to notice that they were actually being creative and learning things and making discoveries.
I'm exactly the same way. I also was kind of judgmental, like he was saying, but he said, be curious, not judgmental.
Yeah.
And it's taken me a little bit to get there, but actually we just had an experience where my son was trying out what it would be like to be a pilot in a real plane. And the pilot said, wow, I can tell you've been practicing your piloting skills online. That's actually really helpful. And I was like, there's one more reason not to be judgmental.
See that?
You never know.
And I appreciated how you talked about being a coach and not a referee, because as a parent, I think you spend a lot of your time thinking about like, okay, I'm going to limit this. I'm going to stop you from doing this. I'm going to count how many minutes you did this. Instead, focus on the rewards of like, if you do this, then yes, you may do this. And let's think about all the benefits, just as you spoke out, Christine, like now your child is ready to become a pilot, right? So it was a good lesson for myself as well.
And I do think when he talked about the idea of sitting down and gaming with your kids, either watching them like as though they're sort of the streamer you're watching or playing with them. When my younger son, when he was smaller and he discovered Roblox, there was a game where you could create like a costume for yourself and then there was like a costume competition. This became a thing that we did together when he was smaller. And I wouldn't have dreamed that up on my own as something we would do together, but I'm so glad that the first time he asked me to do it with him, I said yes. You can find more parenting advice and resources at kidsburg.org. And in a moment, it's time for Tea with Teens.
You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburg.
What do your kids wish you understood better about online gaming? The students at SLB Radio's Youth Media Center helped us out by asking other teens what they wish their own parents understood better about their love of gaming and watching streamers. Let's hear what they said.
I think I wish that it was more common knowledge that gaming is not really the time waster it used to be, because it's a form of storytelling now. It has stories that are sad and happy sometimes. And I don't think a lot of people know that.
For some streamers, I like to see them push through the challenges. While others, I like seeing them be put in the challenges. For Graceful Plays, he's not a good GTA player. I've never seen him give up. That's what I love about him.
Like, something that I wish like my parents or guardians understood better about games and stuff are that just because it has like maybe like mild violence, blood, or anything like that, does not mean that I'm going to grow up as a violent person, or that's going to have like a very negative influence on me. The people on there might, but like the game itself, it like won't affect me.
What I wish parents knew about gaming was like, it's not like something we do just to like avoid doing our homework. It helps us like decompress from like the day or like school or anything, and like we can talk to our friends and stuff like that, and like something free we get to do, and like you could just be yourself.
I am Blake. I am 17 and I am from Hazelwood.
Hi, my name is Sam. I'm 13 and I live in the North Side.
My name is Sue. I'm 12 years old and I live in Pittsburgh.
My name is LaRon. I'm 17 and I live in Sheridan.
This has been a really fun episode, and we've got plenty more inspiration and ideas coming in the next Kidsburg podcast episode.
That's right. We're rolling out new podcast episodes for our third season, and you can check out previous episodes where we talk with everyone from astronauts and Olympians to magicians and AI experts.
Just go to kidsburg.org/podcast to find them all. And be sure to sign up for our free weekly Kidsburg newsletter for all the intel on resources and events that can help you raise the kids you love in the Pittsburgh region and beyond. Thanks for joining us for the Kidsburg Podcast.
This is Rocco. I'm in seventh grade and homeschooled, and this is the Kidsburg Podcast.
On the next Kidsburg podcast, we talk with Andy Masick, director of the Heinz History Center, and the many ways history can come alive for families. Plus, we take you inside the historic Lawrence Mansion, tucked inside Heartwood Acres. And we spill the tea with teens, getting their thoughts on the ways that family stories and sentimental treasures inside their homes connect them to history.
Until then, we hope you'll visit kidsburg.org to find resources, get insight from local experts, and discover all the cool events happening in the Pittsburgh region.